The following is a point of view program. Opinions expressed are those of the participants.
Good evening. This is Jen Ewell with In Other Words, radio by and about women made in Montana. This evening we will hear a recording of a webinar entitled Startup 101, hosted by Startup Women Montana and American Rural. Startup Women Montana is an initiative of the Women's Foundation of Montana that aims to celebrate and connect women entrepreneurs and economic powerhouses in the state. This Startup 101 webinar is the first in a series of conversations and trainings the Women's Foundation of Montana is hosting to support women entrepreneurs in the state as they strive to launch exciting new businesses and ventures. This discussion was designed as an introduction for new entrepreneurs. It was moderated by Diane Smith of American Rural and includes panelists Liz Markey of the Frontier Angel Fund, Paul Gladen of the Blackstone Launchpad at the University of Montana, Don McGee of Good Works Ventures, and Sarah Calhoun of Red Ants Pants. Technical assistance was provided by me, Jen Ewell. You will hear occasional beeps during the conversation, but please know that these are not issues with the transmission, but simply a part of the webinar recording. Here is Startup 101 for Women.
Well, let's get started. Welcome to all of you who are already on the phone with us. I think that you might continue to hear beeps as others continue to join us. We have about 50 people who are going to be on the webinar with us today. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jen Ewell. I'm the program director of the Women's Foundation of Montana, who's the host of this webinar today. And our work is all about increasing economic sustainability for women in Montana and creating a brighter future for girls. So we are very excited to be able to put on this webinar today. One of our initiatives is called Startup Women Montana, and Startup Women Montana is basically our effort to really connect women across the state who are economic powerhouses and doing exciting things in entrepreneurship, and really connect them with other folks doing that work, provide them with mentors and also access to the resources that they need to make them successful. And that's what this webinar is all about. In my work, I have the ability to travel all across the state, and I've been able to talk with lots of women across the state who are trying to start new ventures and really feeling like they are isolated where they are in Montana. And so we're hoping that this webinar and those that follow will allow us to address that need. So to start out, I wanted to welcome both our moderators, Diane Smith, and all of our wonderful panelists today. We've got a great group, and we're going to let them introduce themselves as we go along. So thank you so much for being willing to be the moderator on this call. For those of you who don't know Diane, she's an incredible entrepreneur and an investor. Definitely has started some incredible ventures in her own right, as well as being a wife and mom, an attorney and author. And just an all-around kick-ass girl, and we love having her as part of our dream team. So, Diane, it's all you.
Thanks, Jen. It's great to be here, and welcome to everybody. We get to have a conversation today with some of my very most favorite Montana entrepreneurs and rock stars. So what I'd like to do is just kick off and ask each one of them to introduce themselves. It's just a brief description of who they are and what they do, and we're going to do this alphabetically. So, Sarah, if you'll lead us off, please.
Yes, thank you, Diane, and thank you, Jen, for having me. My name is Sarah Calhoun, and I'm the founding owner of Red Ants Pants, which is a company dedicated to making workwear for women. This came from a need of having appropriately fitting work pants and started in White Sulphur Springs, Montana, north of Bozeman, east of Helena, in the middle of nowhere and everywhere all at the same time. It's a tiny little ranching town of 900. After about 5 years of being in business, I started the Red Ants Pants Music Festival, which we put on every year. We're heading into our fourth year, and that is in conjunction with the nonprofit arm of our company, and that is the Red Ants Pants Foundation in support of women's leadership, working family farms and ranches, and rural communities. So we stay pretty busy with those three adventures.
That's great. Thank you. Paul.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity to participate today. I'm Paul Gladen. I have at least three hats, which I think appears to be a Montana trait these days, even though you can tell from the accent I'm not from these parts originally. But I'm co-founder of a business called NewsView, which is based in Missoula, which provides research and intelligence to law firms and accounting firms. I'm also with Dawn McGee, co-founder of the Hellgate Venture Network, which is a entrepreneurial networking group here in Missoula. And as of about 3 months ago, I'm now also the director of the Blackstone Launchpad here at the University of Montana, where our role is to help students and alumni who want to start their own business.
Great. Liz?
Hi, Diane. And Jen, I'm so excited. As far as I know, this is our first electronically connected event with fabulous women. And as I look down the list, I'm excited to see everybody who's on the call today. I was headhunted to Montana in 2000, and entrepreneurs told me there was no money, and I knew there was money everywhere. So I, after doing an economic development startup that was privately funded in the Flathead, we formed Frontier Fund 1, and now we're on Frontier Fund 2. And so there is smart, sophisticated, early-stage capital. We really want to deploy that in Montana. But the more I've learned about business, which mostly you learn by doing, I've learned that I spend a lot of time talking people out of raising money. But in addition to that, we have a ranch. I sell Wagyu beef to, and just rolling out our first retail products. And I also chaired the board, the advisory board, for 7 years for the Flathead Beacon. And we recently purchased Flathead Living magazine. And now that I'm 60, I'm writing about aging.
Cool. Dawn, are you here? Okay, I was worried that we missed Dawn. So hopefully she'll catch up with us. And as Jen said, I'm Diane Smith. I started a company in Northwest Montana that today is known as Ubiquity. We took that company from nothing, what we call the two guys, a dog and an idea phase, to a $30 million money raise in about 3.5 years. And today it is the largest multi-platform provider of digital media services in the world. And employs about 30 people here in Kalispell and hundreds of people worldwide. And I am proud to say that some of the most cutting-edge video compression and distribution technology today in the world get invented in Kalispell, Montana. So with that, I'd like to lead off with our first question, and I'd like everybody to answer this, but Liz, I want to start with you. So presume that you're an entrepreneur and you have an idea. What do you do now?
So when you have an idea for a product or a service, and I'm mostly going to be focused on for-profit ventures because I want women to be wealthy and have money so that they can promote their values, because that's what money is best used for. See if somebody will buy it. Go talk to customers. Nothing happens till sales are made. That's a great June 40s line that we've all stolen. But you need to really talk to customers and make sure that it's a customer problem and not just a problem you think they might have. You can't do enough networking. Talk to lots of people. Get lots of ideas. And make sure that you've validated that your idea has some market traction opportunity. So that would be my first step.
That's a great answer. Paul, what do you say?
I fully endorse Liz's previous answer. I very much talk to people about really sort of sharing their idea as much as they can. I think sometimes people are, one, sort of very nervous about sharing their idea because they think people are going to steal it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think unless you've sort of discovered kind of the solution to nuclear fusion or you've got something that's really patentable, in most instances, the best thing you can do is expose your ideas, as Liz was saying, to get feedback and get validation. The other part of talking to people about your idea is not just feedback, but also through that networking, you may get connected to people who can help you kind of further validate that idea. So people that you think may have no interest in your idea, talk to them about it because they may suddenly reveal that they've got a friend or a relative that's active in that industry or that field that you're looking to pursue your idea in. So that may open the door to a potential customer or a potential supplier or even a potential investor.
That's great. Sarah, what did you do?
Yes, I echo both those sentiments. The other big thing, I think, is to do your research. You absolutely need to know your industry and understand what's going on and research your competition. Is there anyone else doing this similar product or business or service? And if not, why not? There might be a really good reason why it's not going to sell and that sort of thing. So make a point to see what other people are doing. You know, if it's a service-based industry, it might not be as important as a product. For example, Red Ants Pants, I knew there was nothing in the industry because I'd been trying to find them for 5 years of working in the backcountry and doing manual labor, and there was nothing, and everyone I knew was wearing men's work pants because that's all there was. And I surveyed other customers like crazy, like actual handwritten surveys that I sent out to dozens of women working in the woods. So I think really doing a research, understanding the market and the potential for the market. A lot of businesses I see start up don't actually know their core customer, and that's a problem. I think you really need to be your core customer. And if you're not one of them, you need to really do your due diligence to understand their buying habits and what they are actually looking for and how much they're going to pay and that sort of thing. And the other really big thing I'd love to throw out is have a really, once you've connected with these networks and done your research and found mentors to help you and questioned your customers and made sure there was a need for it, is to really have a good talk with yourself about how serious you are about being in business as far as your personal life and where you want to go, because it is one heck of a big commitment.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I didn't say this before. I am also now a social entrepreneur and the CEO of American Rural, which is a co-sponsor of this event. But the process that we've gone through at American Rural is very similar to the process that we went to at Ubiquity, where we asked customers what they were interested in. So, and I so agree with that insight into knowing your customers and doing your research. Paul, talk to me about how Blackstone can help.
Blackstone can help in a lot of ways. So essentially, we're here really to provide free consulting. So we'll sit down with anyone with an idea, and it can be literally they've just got this idea kind of that's been bouncing around in their head, and we'll help them try and sort of expand that idea, understand the different dimensions of it, and really help support them through a process of initially that sort of exploration, that validation, that market research that we've just been talking about, and then hopefully as they start to get kind of hopefully some positive answers or some answers at least take them in a direction that's kind of interesting, an interesting opportunity, we'll then try and support them through the actual sort of startup and kind of growth phases of their business. But in addition to sort of really providing some of that sort of consulting support and helping people kind of think through the process, the other thing we'll do is try and help connect sort of entrepreneurs that come in here with other expertise both across the state and elsewhere that can help them, whether that's specific legal advice, financial advice, whether it's connecting them with someone that has experience or knowledge in an industry, whether it's finding other kind of seasoned entrepreneurs that can help someone understand some of the trials and tribulations and challenges of being an entrepreneur. So we're very much here to provide kind of support through the process. And actually, I think probably that one of the most valuable things we can do right at the start is just give someone sort of validation that they're not crazy to have the idea of pursuing their own idea. And we very much we don't take a position or a view that tells people whether their idea is good or bad, because, one, I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that question, but really only by going out and doing the research can you figure out whether your idea has kind of real potential and validation. So we're here to try and encourage you and support you to explore your idea, particularly given I think that for most people it's probably something they're very passionate about, and actually being passionate about your idea is a key to success. So we're here to try and help you pursue that passion.
I think that's great. So a lot of what you're talking about, Paul, is what I've written about this, is something that I call social capital.
Mm-hmm.
And social capital to me is the willingness of people to know, to help those they know or know of. And I know everybody on this call has experience with using social capital to help them grow their businesses. And Liz, I know social capital is a big thing for you. Talk to me about how you see it used.
I think social capital, and frankly, one of the questions that came in early from one of the participants was, what do they see as sort of any advantages that we have in Montana for doing business? And I think that's probably at the top of our list. We trust each other. We are we all talk about 6 degrees of separation in Montana. It's 2 or less. And I was absolutely amazed when I started on what seemed at the time a completely insane journey to raise a fund in, you know, the middle of nowhere, at the people that quickly connected and found me. So get way out of your comfort zone, get way out of your Rolodex, and this is my favorite part of leaning in. You can't be shy, and frankly, it's as easy here as it is anywhere. I mean, nothing about growing a business is easy, but I do think the support system here is absolutely extraordinary, both in Montana and what those who are here who are willing to do in terms of national and global connections. I had the excitement the other day of connecting a woman in Bozeman to a woman who does business in Yangon, Myanmar, in the cosmetic business, and it was so exciting to be able to do that. And both of them said, no, that would never happen anywhere else. So social capital is, frankly, I think one of our long suits here.
And Sarah, you've grown your business, and I know you've had a lot of folks that have been supporters for you along the way. How have you used social capital?
I don't think we can do this on our own. I mean, it's really it's a huge network. We need mentors. We need a community of support, and that is so incredibly accessible. I really feel like I could call up any senator or representative or the governor's office, and people would pick up the phone and say, what can we do for you today, kind of a thing, or likewise any business across the state. And I was very lucky. When I first moved to Montana, I didn't even know what a business plan was, so I bought How to Start a Small Business for Dummies, which is a great book, and then I was reading it the very first weekend I moved here. I had never been to Montana. I had this crazy idea to start a line of workwear, and I was sitting at a coffee shop in Bozeman reading it, and a guy noticed the book. We got to talking. It turned out for the past 20 years he had done production and design for Patagonia, and we just got to talking. A really fateful moment for my story. And he gave me his card and said, give me a call sometime. And I said, okay, I will do that. you don't call me like that. So I called him, and we visited his shop the next week, and he gave me loads of contacts and advice, and he is on my advisory board to this day. And people that he has connected me with have led me to the rest of my advisory board, to my manufacturers in Seattle, to different, like the MMEC, Montana Manufacturing Extension Center, and all these excellent services. And it's being open to those opportunities, and you really literally can just sit in a coffee shop. And that's, I mean, it's a great story, but it's true, and it's so Montana that it's very friendly and accessible here. And open yourself up to that, and then follow up and take advantage of those opportunities when they do fall. Like, we're all busy, and I could have just, you know, thrown his business card away and forgotten about it, but that really led to the next great thing, and it continued on. So use the people, and I find that, like, I get calls weekly of people saying, hey, I have this crazy idea, can I talk to you for 20 minutes? And absolutely, like, there's so many people that are willing to help you guys and help all of us. Like, I wouldn't have been able to get where I am without mentors teaching me the industry and being willing to answer the questions. So definitely reach out and ask for help and be open to those opportunities.
That's great. Paul, do you have anything else?
Only really supportive of that. I mean, I think just my experience co-founding the Hellgate Venture Network kind of 5+ years ago has really sort of reinforced for me the value of networking and kind of connecting with others. And as Liz has said, this is just an amazing state in terms of people's willingness to kind of share their time and share their perspectives. So I would just encourage people to, even perhaps before you've sort of made that decision that you want to start a business, that you're sort of just toying with the idea. We have lots of people that come to Hellgate meetings that are, they've got regular jobs, but they're just sort of thinking about starting a business and sort of wanting to kind of dip their toe in the water. So I would kind of find groups like HBN and other sort of places across the state where you can just find other people to go talk to and just start a conversation, because you never know where it will take you. But just get out there, that you'll find people will be incredibly receptive to talking to you about your idea and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I know. In our case too, we drove around the state of Montana and did customer meetings, and by the time we were done driving around, we discovered we had a fully fleshed out business plan, and it was all because all these potential customers were willing to sit down and talk to us. We just got a great question from Maria, who said that she started her own business out of her own funds 2 years ago and wants to know what we suggest for people who are at a point of wanting to expand the current business but don't know how to get funding to expand. Paul, will you take that one first?
Yeah, so the funding question is always a interesting one, and we can go a bunch of different directions in that. I think the first question before you really go and look for funding is really understand what do you want that funding for. So really be, when you're saying you want to scale the business, what does that actually mean? And I'm sure Liz will probably kind of chip in on this, funding is sort of, should be your kind of source of last resort. And if you've already got customers, try to explore as many ways as you can first to figure out, can you scale a business by using your customers and revenue as the sources of funding for the business? So I would definitely first off try to explore ways that you can look to try and generate additional kind of revenues. So, for example, we've talked to a couple of people on the Launchpad recently about ways in which you can get customers to sort of prepay, get them to commit to kind of longer-term contracts. So there are a number of things you can do sort of creatively on the revenue side to sort of create additional funds that can help you scale up. But if you really feel, look, I've got to invest in some capability, whether it's hiring another person or it's getting some kind of facilities, really be very clear about kind of what you want to spend that money on. Figure out how you can minimize how much money you're going to actually spend on those things. And then before you start to go kind of reaching out to potential sources of funding, understand what you are willing to sort of put yourself through in terms of funding, because you're going to get sort of two or three different paths, and this is probably a longer conversation than we want to go down right now. But you're either going to be probably sort of beholden to a bank and putting kind of security and assets up, putting those things up to risk, or you're going to be giving up ownership in the business. So really understand, why are you doing this? What do you need to spend the money for? And what are you willing to sort of put on the line, or what are you willing to give up to take on that funding? Because it will fundamentally change the dynamics of your business when you have other people that are providing funding to your business. Let me sort of pause there in case you want to take this conversation in a particular direction, Diane, but I don't want to get into a detailed discussion of sort of funding options unless that's where we want to go.
And okay, do you mind if I jump in here, Diane?
No, you were in my next call.
Oh,
my next
good. So to piggyback Paul's point, one of the things that I've learned from working with high net worth investors is that they are the tightest people on the planet, and you need to look at every penny in your business. And if it isn't going toward generating sales or improving your product or generating sales or growing sales, there's probably money that you can find. And Paul's point is exactly right. Whether you take on a lender or you take on an investor, it's like getting married. It comes with a lot of commitment and consequences for actions. And one of the things that a lot of businesses don't understand about equity investing and angel investors, our money's really for the kind of business that wants to grow and scale and sell so that creates wealth, and then you can turn around and start another business if you want to. But a lot of people, that's not their aspiration. So that's also a big conversation you want to have with yourself. And there's no value judgment here. It's just that there's different financial paths for different aspirational, you know, courses. And I actually think in Montana, MCDC out of Missoula, which operates statewide, is probably one of the finest lending operations I've ever seen. They're so innovative. They have an incredibly high success rate lending to what banks would consider very high-risk loans. But part of that is that they provide the kind of cash flow work that you really need, because understanding the cash flow in your business is really critical for lending. Most of the businesses that we invest in at Frontier Fund don't have much cash flow, if any. Most of them are pre-revenue. So it's a completely different kind of analysis about the funding path.
That's great. Sarah, what did you do?
I'm glad we're having this discussion, and I actually am learning from this quite a bit. I am certainly not a financial guru. I initially went through SBA and talked with them and learned how to write a business plan with their assistance, all free. And then they were, you know, they put together the whole, they potentially will back you with a loan. And I went to the first stodgy old banker that came out, and he read over my business plan, and I was so proud of it. And he said, well, what do you need work pants for? We already got Carhartt. I was like, oh, you don't get it. Like, bring a female banker out here. And it was, the interest rates were incredibly high at that point. And I was very fortunate in that I could borrow privately for about 1.8%, which was awesome. And it was, I think, around 9% at that time with the bank. So I was able to go privately, and Liz, I like your point that using investors may not be for everyone. And from my perspective, starting this company, I've put 10 years into getting it, dedicating my life and my identity to it. It's really become my baby in a big way. And I would have an incredibly hard time. Unfortunately, I haven't been up against a wall where I've needed to turn towards investors yet. And I think investors are great for some fits, like Liz said. But for me, having someone else have control of my project would be really, really hard. From what I understand, and Liz, please correct me if I'm wrong, but there's often a certain element of hands-on and or advice-giving and or you feel like you need to be doing what the investor is telling you to do to run your company kind of a thing, and perhaps that's not an accurate statement, Liz, but I think
that's
recognizing that personal element of your own business, because I could never, I am absolutely not in the camp of starting a business, putting everything you've got into it just to sell it quick and grow it and make money off it. I would like to get to the point someday where I am making money, but to me it's a bigger project than the financial side as well. And not that there's anything wrong with growing a business to make some money and selling it off, but for those of you or us that do perhaps have different missions with it, just consider other options. And then there's, see what else is out there. And if you're not able to go through MCDC or SBA or banks or privately, or there's always the crowdfunding, the Kickstarter, and that sort of thing. And one thing we've considered, too, is doing pre-sales of a new line of products, which works great for products. That would be difficult in the service industry, though.
Yeah. So and I do want to make a comment on the control piece, because one of my big passions about angels as opposed to venture capitalists, who are quite different, venture capitalists invest other people's money, and they have only one objective, and that is to make money for those other people and for themselves. Angels absolutely want, we have to make money, we want to make money, we're going to make money, but we have a double bottom line. We're angels because we believe in seeding new enterprise in the world, in our space that we live in. And it's a different cultural fit. We're not, while I would wish we were Silicon Valley in terms of, you know, domestic, gross domestic product for Montana, we're not living there for a reason. We have a very different culture here, and I want capital that matches that culture. We, as angels, never want to own very much of your business. We syndicate with lots of others. It's very risky lending. And I do want to tell, I think women sometimes don't realize, most most early stage businesses are funded by family and friends. I mean, that really is the source of most early stage capital for startups. But because very few entrepreneurs are bankable. They have neither cash nor collateral, which are the two things banks look at. And I think sometimes we're hesitant to run our trap line and ask, you know, each other. And that's sort of one of my aspirations into old age, is that we have a better network of women who are willing to be friends and family for startups in the state.
Yeah, jump in, Paul.
Yeah, just a couple of sort of comments just on, because I know kind of sort of finance and accounting math also isn't a lot of people's kind of favorite subject, but just to sort of give you a couple of sort of simple sort of kind of numbers to play with just to understand sort of the implications for your business of taking on funding. And I credit Greg G. and Forte for the first one of these. If you really wanting to kind of accelerate the growth of your business, so you're taking money in to enable you to do that, if you give up 50% of your business to get that fund, get that funding, you've now got to grow your business twice as far just to deliver yourself the same return as you'd have had if you just kind of carried on without it. So understand that sort of dynamics of if you're giving up a big chunk of the business, mm-hmm. you're now going to have to grow much faster to be able to deliver yourself the financial return. So if you're in the growth business for those financial returns, understand the constraints on that. If you're borrowing money, let's say you're borrowing $100,000 at kind of 6%, that's $6,000 of interest a year. That's an extra $500 of expense per month that you've got to figure out to pay. So make sure that the $100,000 that you're spending on some other activity, whether it's equipment or people, is at least going to be generating $500 or more of kind of revenue for you. So when you sort of run the numbers, make sure you understand not just what it gets you, but whether what it gets you actually kind of returns what you've sort of taken on from the banks or investors.
Yeah. And the other side of that, though, is when you have to grow your business twice as large, you're probably employing 25 or 30 more people, and there is enormous power in providing employment for people. Everybody isn't wired to be an entrepreneur. I mean, I love it, but, you know, it's scary, it's risky, people fail, you lose things, but there is huge power in employment, and we all know that's very important to our long-term well-being. So, you know, it's really about you having that conversation with yourself. And Diane's business, for example, geez, I mean, huge employer, and has brought incredible value, and the jobs that your company provides today pay six figures. They're
yeah.
great jobs.
Yeah, I actually come at this. I like building and being part of businesses that want to grow very big. So I tend to, you know, I tend to favor equity, but I will also, I think something that entrepreneurs should know, I sold $1.2 million of service before our service was fully in existence for beta customers. So one of the things to think about is going to your customers and seeing if you can get them to prepay. It's a good way to generate investment without giving up equity or taking on debt. And just so everybody knows, too, if you have questions out there, type them in, because we love answering questions. And we love helping entrepreneurs. So if you've got questions, just type them in and we'll get to them. And Maria, that was a great question. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And can I mention one more thing in Montana? Bootstrap Montana, which is Greg's, he has a zero interest loan program that is worth checking into for small businesses. Lots of, you know, consumer product businesses have used that very successfully.
Great. Okay, so here's one of my favorite questions to entrepreneurs, and that is, what pieces of wisdom do you wish you'd known when you got started that you know now? Sarah, will you take that one first?
Oh, boy. Honestly, if I knew what I was getting into, I don't know if I would have had the courage to go for it, and I think being naive at 25 and jumping in was what saved me and got me to where I am now. The big piece is, I mean, you've got to have an incredibly strong work ethic. We all know that. As far as wisdom, I think being able to admit you've made a mistake and trying to figure out how to learn from it and move on and overcome whatever obstacle it is in front of you, that's a big one. And being able to ask for help, like I said before, really just reaching out to folks. Those have been really good nuggets for me. Understand, you know, along the lines of asking for help, it's understanding our weaknesses. We certainly, at the beginning of entrepreneurship, we have to wear all the hats in a small business because you can't afford to pay someone else to wear them, and you need to learn things that you never were interested in, and really, quite frankly, you can't be good at everything. And they always say, hire your weakness, but you can't afford to pay your weakness yet, so you've got to figure out how to do it, and that's really hard. And, like, for me, it's the numbers game. And, like, in some ways I like numbers and goals, but I am terrified of setting, like, sales goals quarterly or whatnot, because what if I don't meet them, then I'm failing and I can't live with myself then. And there's that sort of element. So someone very wisely told me from the get-go, like, find a good numbers person. That's going to be really key. And I'm still working on getting that part together. But understanding that you can't be good at everything and that's okay, you know, stumble through what you have to until you can't afford to pay someone for your weaknesses. So.
Great advice. Liz?
Everything Sarah said is so true. There's this fabulous thing about youth and inexperience that you can do things that, you know, you just know need to be done, so you're going to do them. The working hard part, there are no hours. You work all the time when you're in a startup. And the other thing is the hesitancy. I think getting out and doing it, I love Diane's story of driving around. You got to get out of your own head and your own box and realize that you can't scale much without a team. And that's one of our things. We have all these strong, you know, cowboy and cowgirl mentalities here that we can go out and do it ourselves because we have for so long. So I think building the team, knowing you can't scale without a team, and Sarah, to your point, you know, we tend to be wired as women for perfection. We're incredible multitaskers. We do a million things. We have family, work. And I think letting go of that is really important, and losing the fear of failure, because there is no failure. Only failure is not to try.
Paul?
Yeah, I think things I've learned, one, the point we discussed earlier, which I won't go over again, of the sort of customer validation piece. I think another issue, which not so much that I sort of learned the hard way, but I've learned the importance of, is if you have co-founders or you bring other sort of senior members, owners into the business relatively early on, that the value of a, and I don't normally say that, sing the praises of attorneys, but actually having a really, really well-worded operating agreement that really sets out kind of the rules of engagement amongst yourselves, how you handle sort of ownership, how you handle compensation, how you handle kind of disputes and kind of people leaving the business. Those sorts of things are just incredibly important, because I think those are one of the biggest sources of kind of stress and kind of failure in businesses, is the inability for kind of co-founders and owners to get on. So I would really encourage people, if you're bringing other people into the business, really make sure you thought through and work through and talk through those issues with your kind of co-founders and business partners, and then make sure you've got an attorney that's written that up to be properly reflected in your kind of legal documents.
Yeah, as an attorney, I really support that, and I give lots of advice that makes other attorneys cringe, but this would not be one of them. I think the operating agreement really matters, and for those of you on the call who are thinking about this, what you need to be asking your co-founders is, what do we do? Not only there's two times when a business has to worry about things. One is when there's a lot of money, and one is when there's not very much money or no money at all. And
right.
Ask yourself questions like, what if we have to get rid of a co-founder? What happens to those shares in the business? What happens to that equity position? Because most businesses will have to address that sooner or later. Most startups will have to. And part of the reason is because it typically takes longer to get liftoff than you anticipate. And I know in my case, we had folks that had to go back to work, right? So we literally had people that could no longer afford to make as little money as they were making and had to go get real jobs. And then we had to redo our shares and our equity to reflect that. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. So beginning.
Go ahead, Liz. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, beginning with the end in mind is actually quite important in a business. And if you don't have any, you need to think about that.
The other thing I'll say that I wish that I'd known is how important, and this is important for a lot of women, the value of your family is going to be. They are going to be there for you when you get lost. They're going to help you find the North Star again. You need them to support you. And so really let them help you and support you even beyond what you think they're willing to do. I promise you they're going to be willing to go farther than most of us tend to think. So I would really recommend doing that. We've all talked about the courage that it takes. How do you deal with the stress? What do you do? Sarah, you want to lead that one?
I have a drink or two at the end of every day, but getting out into the hills and just getting outside and exercise is a really big one too, because it's so hard to get your head out of the weeds when you're in the thick of it. And once you step back and just look around at this gorgeous place we live, it reminds you that our problems really aren't that bad, that it's just a pair of pants. You know, I'm not dealing in life or death situations here, and if things go wrong, there's a lot more. It helps you just put things in perspective, to get out of the office, get outside, go be social, hang out with your family and friends and whatever you need. And exercise is a really big one. I find that as much as you know that, it's sometimes hard to motivate when you have so much going on, but you just take half an hour and get out and then have a cocktail.
Paul?
I agree about exercise and blocking out some time just to kind of do something fun. It's easy to get sucked into just spending every hour kind of doing work on the business. So the power of taking a day off and just doing some fun stuff, I think, is incredibly important. I think the other thing, I think Sarah was saying kind of earlier about kind of you're not going to know all the answers. You're going to need other people. So when you get stressed about something, you're trying to figure something out, go talk to people, whether it is kind of your partners in the business, or whether it's just kind of good friends, or kind of even sometimes sort of reasonably kind of distant business contacts that you may have made through a network. Go and have a conversation with them. Most people have experienced some of these challenges and issues before, so you're not necessarily kind of dealing with something that's never been encountered, so that there are often solutions out there. So go seek out those solutions, seek other people's guidance. Just getting a different perspective on the issue may suddenly kind of help you see a different way of addressing a problem that you think is intractable, because, as Sarah says, you're sort of so down in the weeds you can't really see the bigger picture.
Great. Liz?
I call Diane.
Yeah. Yeah. Liz and I talk to each other. And girlfriends, yeah. You and I would both say that.
And find girlfriends who will tell you the truth. You know, you don't need somebody to tell you. You know, you screw up sometimes. You need somebody to tell you that. I tend to be a little too sensitive sometimes about things, and I need somebody to tell me that can, you know, love the people who tell you the truth in your life.
So do we have questions from the audience that we can be answering? Jen?
Yeah, actually, this is a good, I think, follow-up to what you all have just been talking about. So Josh asks, how do you get beyond the mindset of perfectionism to actually launching the product?
I love Brad Fell's line. If you don't look back on the first product you launch in 3 years and puke, then you waited too long. But it's really hard. Yeah, just get out a minimum viable product. But it's really hard for us to do that.
Paul?
It's as simple as that. You just got to get over it. And I think lean startups use a similar language. It's kind of like you should almost be embarrassed by your first product. But it's whatever you do, it isn't going to be perfect. So kind of recognize that and therefore just get it out there and get people's reaction. But you're not going to be able to perfect it yourself. You're only perfected with feedback of others.
Sarah, you got anything?
I don't. I'm apparently still learning that lesson.
I was going to say, in all due respect to the wonderful men on our call today, I will tell you, after looking at
over 600 business plans in the state of Montana. And this is an exaggeration, but it's the truth. We are wired differently. Women will come in, they will be cash flow positive, or they will be changing the world in a really realistic way. And a guy will come in with a pencil and say, I can cure cancer, and you're so lucky, give me $1 million. I mean, it's just, we're so different in our approach. And I think that's something we have to learn, because the nature of business is business. You know, it is not who we are totally, but we've got to get better at understanding that there's money involved, and we need to be more comfortable with making it. Because some of us feel guilty when we make money.
Actually, yeah, I think it's an important part of what you're just saying there, though, that kind of criticism of the product or the service is not criticism of you. And I think it's easy when it's sort of you're building your own business and you feel like your own baby, that kind of if someone doesn't like your product, that somehow that's a criticism of you, and it's not.
Yeah. So tell me I have an ugly baby.
Jen, what else do you have?
We also had a question about the use of advisory boards. I think maybe Sarah had mentioned her advisory board, and we had a question, I'm trying to find who it was from Brooke, I think, about how best to use an advisory board and who would be, you know, sort of good people to have in that group.
Great questions. Sarah, you want to take it?
Yes. I started out forming one right out of the gate, well, actually maybe it was 2 or so years, once I hit the market with things. And as you learn very quickly, you aren't an expert at everything, and I think it's really, really wise to bring together, as soon as you can, a team of very, very trusted mentors. They don't have to be professionals in the industry. They can be either even family or friends that you just really trust their opinion. But in my case, I have that guy from Patagonia, and then a guy that had done a lot of sourcing for Sims, and a guy that worked for Dana Designs, and then NMEC, and then a woman that was really good into business stuff, and just people that you look up to as being bright and that you trust their advice. And you can set it up any way you want. In my case, we try to meet once or twice a year, and we try to do it in person, I try to do it overnight and do a float trip so that we can all really get into it, and I think that's a fun element too, if that time is available. And then I use them. I put together all the big things I'm thinking about. And building a team is so valuable. And you'll find I haven't paid any of them anything. Like, I give them flasks with the Red Ants Pants logo on it, and that's their annual thank you kind of a thing. And just set up a group where you can be vulnerable and just put yourself out there, and it could be totally confidential. I've never done anything official with, you know, confidentiality sheets and whatnot, but I do sit on other boards now that I learn just as much being an advisor on boards. So I think it's really, really valuable, and I think you'll find, you know, it's different for each industry and for whatever kind of business you're starting, but just find the people you absolutely trust. I think that's the huge element there.
Great advice. I hear that Dawn is on. Dawn, you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. Yeah.
I apologize for being late. I was stuck in a meeting.
So, Dawn, just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then tell us real quickly your thoughts on advisory boards, please.
Yeah, so I invest in companies and have worked with and mentored entrepreneurs since about 1995, and definitely encourage an entrepreneur advisory board as much as possible. And I think the one comment I have isn't mine, but it comes from my dear friend Lisa Lorimer, who said, make sure that you take your advisory board seriously and compensate them with something. They're going to put out more for you if you're able to do something, even if it's baking brownies, which she did in the beginning. But as soon as she was able to actually pay them a little bit, she did, and found that, you know, that really engaged their service and engaged them to be more professionally committed to exactly what was happening. So there's just one other comment I'd like to add, Diane, for, like, the conversation we were just having about women and entrepreneurs. And the one thing that I would say that I've seen is the ability to hyper-focus, like, to a ridiculous degree is what makes entrepreneurs successful. And so for me, pick three things, no more than three things, you're going to get done a week, and there should be big things, and everything else goes by the wayside. Your house is going to be messy. Your kids might be eating Pop-Tarts. but you're going to focus on the three most important things that you need to accomplish for your business and move it down the road.
That's a great point, and so happy to have you on. So, Jen, do we have another question, or shall I pop one?
Well, let me ask you one more sort of fairly quick, specific one. Sandra asks, what funding is available that's specifically for women entrepreneurs?
So, Dawn, why don't you lead with that one, and then, Liz, we're going to go to you after that.
Well, the biggest source of funding specifically for women entrepreneurs is a group called ASTIA out of the San Francisco Bay Area, and they focus mostly on women-owned technology companies. There are some other funds that have women as a potential side focus, and it might get you sort of some extra bonus points if you're a women entrepreneur, but I know no other exclusively women-owned funds.
I agree with you, Dawn, but I would say that I have, in Montana, I've actually worked quite a bit with companies that do minority contracting with the U.S. government, and that is just another form, actually, of bootstrapping your business. Get set aside as a, you know, a minority business. They, you know, it's a great way to get customers off the base. The danger with that is that often you need to wean yourself off government contracting if you're going to ever be a real business and continue on. So that comes with some hair on it.
Sarah or Paul?
Nothing more to add.
Okay. Okay. And Jen, you have anything else?
Okay, maybe we'll give you one more from the audience. We have a lot of questions. So there's a question out there from a couple people, which is about if you live in a more rural area and maybe you don't have access to as many people to help or resources like Blackstone, how do you recommend aspiring entrepreneurs go about networking?
Okay, well, I'm a huge virtual networking fan, but I'm going to kick that one first to Paul. And then, Sarah, I'd like, since you're White Sulphur Springs, I'd like for you to take that mm-hmm. second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a couple of things. One, at the launch pad, even though we're a physical space here on campus, we're more than happy to kind of work with people by phone or kind of Skype or Google Hangouts. So we're more than happy to do that. But I would also say, I mean, networking doesn't have to happen in kind of formal networking activities. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you may be in a rural location, but probably from time to time, you're going to go into locations where there are more people. So do some of that virtual networking so that at least when you're going into one of the bigger kind of towns or cities, maybe you can line up to meet with a couple of people and just get with them for coffee for half an hour. So I think you can do plenty of it remotely, but don't feel that you've got to do kind of networking in the big cities at formal networking events. Just reach out and connect with people. And then if you have the opportunity to meet with them face-to-face at some point, then take up that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Great. Sarah?
Yes, I would echo that as well. I think just anywhere you go, any circumstances you're in, whether it's at your kid's soccer game or I meet so many interesting people on airplanes, actually sitting next to them, and have made great friends that way. Just don't hesitate to be open to the world, and you'll find that people just take interest in what you're doing. And I think networking happens so much more organically that way and more genuinely somehow. So whatever you do, don't hesitate to chat about your business and your idea and what your needs are. And again, pick people's minds. If you read the stories of what cool entrepreneurs are doing, and then don't hesitate to reach out. You can call or Skype with Diane. She'd be happy to talk to you, I'm sure, or any of us. You know, it's people feel very complimented when someone's like, "Oh, I love what you're doing. Can you give me some help?" You know, like it boosts our ego too, which I think is so. People are very, very willing to help and want to reach back behind the folks that are coming up and give a hand. And you can do that from anywhere. I have Skype and Google Hangout meetings from folks all over the continent every day almost. You're definitely not limited by being in a rural area. I think there's so many benefits actually by being rural, because real estate's cheaper, the quality of life is fantastic. You often have good quality of workforce and such. So just reach out, use the technology, and be open and friendly wherever you go, and people will be drawn to it.
Yeah, in American Rural, we collect stories of people that are rural entrepreneurs from all over the country, and it's amazing what's going on. Jen, I think about 3 minutes left.
Yeah, we better wrap up. Is there anything else you wanted to ask your final question, Diane?
I was going to do a real quick, you know, one last thought for folks and go backwards from where we went before. So, Dawn, quick thought.
It's actually supposed to be fun, even though it seems incredibly serious, so make sure to laugh.
Great. Liz?
Like the Montana Women's Foundation, we have a women's entrepreneurs page, correct, Jen?
We do, and we're working on a whole new website, which hopefully will be up later this summer to connect women entrepreneurs.
It's so important that we build our organic virtual networks in the state. The web developers have 800 people. I would like for women entrepreneurs to have, you know, a LinkedIn page that's Fontana or whatever, but social media is our friend here.
Great. Paul?
Go start a conversation with someone. Nothing will happen until you start talking to people because you're not going to do it alone and people won't buy your product until you start talking about it. So start a conversation with someone and then start a conversation with someone else.
I think those are all great points. And I would also say join us on American Rural on Facebook or Twitter. We do a lot of work as well and happy to do this with the Montana Women's Foundation. And again, Jen, I can't thank you enough for putting this together because convened a group of rock stars and we could go on all day.
I know. It was awesome. Thank you all so much for being on the call. And thank you, panelists, for sharing your wisdom, and especially Diane Smith and American Rural for co-sponsoring this webinar. And you can find more information at our website, www.wsmontana.org.
You've been listening to In Other Words Radio, radio by and about women made in Montana. If you'd like to learn more about Startup Women Montana, you can do so at the website of the Women's Foundation of Montana, www.wfmontana.org. If you'd like to learn more about In Other Words Radio, or hear other programs created by and about women in Montana, you can do so at our website, inotherwordsradio.com. Thanks for listening.